Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to the weekend review with Celtic Down Under. Thanks, Anthony, for filling in for me last week when I was unable to take part. Did a good job, try and do a poorer job next time so my job doesn't feel threatened. Thanks for that.
Your job's safe. Your job is safe, Sean, trust me.
Didn't enjoy it so much, no.
It's a challenge.
Yeah. Yeah, the West Australian edition, again, as always. It's been a rough couple of weeks, but we'll start just about a catch-up. How was your weekend, Anthony?
I had a great weekend, Sean. I've been away for the last 4 days south with my mates down in Edel Bay. So I had a great time, nice and relaxed. I'm actually... Yeah, I was looking forward to doing this today because I sort of had a little bit of time to think about the game, even though I was half cut on Saturday night. But I think I can remember what happened just about. So, I had a great time. So I'm, fit and firing.
Paul, did you watch the game at 10 p.m. or did you watch it next day?
No, I watched it. I watched it at the time. Sober. So had a few beers on Friday, had a few beers on Sunday, but no beers on Saturday. So yeah, pretty tired actually after the big night the night before. But watched it live, and we'll get into the nitty gritty. It was, but for the result, it was pretty entertaining game actually. If you were a neutral, I guess you'd probably have enjoyed it.
Yeah, that's one way of looking at it, right? Yeah, I had a game. I wasn't drinking on Saturday either because I had a game on Sunday, which we lost 1-0 to Forest Field, who had their coach doing the refereeing, so there was never any chance of us winning that, really. Real shortage of referees at the moment. I guess most of them are playing, so I think there's about 40 or 50 games didn't have a referee the weekend, so it's a pretty grim state. So if anyone in WA wants to get some cash, get some refereeing done, promise I'll be nice to you. I was even nice to the coach that was a bit of a tosser at the weekend. Not that he was a tosser, but he literally gave us one free kick the whole half. It was like, you know, a Sevco referee. Anyway, we can maybe talk about them later. I'd rather not.
Wait till you see who's refereeing the cup for the Scottish Cup final.
I've seen it.
We'll touch on that later. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. We can do. Right, so let's start by chatting about the main event, which was Celtic versus St Mirren. So St Mirren came looking for a win because they still had hopes of European qualification, which they still do, even after the result. But now they're kind of relying on Celtic to win the cup to have that chance at the fifth spot of getting into Europe. So they came along, they had a game plan. We changed our starting 11 back to the players that had been parachuted in at Ibrox were parachuted back onto the bench, and Bernabe and Kobayashi. So what did you make of that starting 11, first of all, Paul? And what did you think of Kobayashi being on the bench? Now, there's a few kind of chats going around about why that was. Was it because he had a shocker against the two Sevco teams, the Huns and the Diet Huns? Was it because of the threat of Curtis Main? Or Ange said after the game, or before rather, that it was just to try and get some game time into Awata? What do you think? What did you believe was the reason for that change?
Oh, look, I think probably he was worried about Kobayashi being targeted by Main. That was probably one thing. His confidence couldn't have been great afterwards. So then there's an argument is, you know, is it more of a confidence dent to be left out? Or are you protecting him a little bit from potentially getting roughed up and the confidence dipping even further? So he's got players to rotate. Iwata's played at centre-back quite regularly at Yokohama. So on the face of it, you know, that was an option worth having a look at. He obviously didn't have a great game either.
What you're saying there about targeting Kobayashi, well, Curtis Main came out after the game and said when he seen the team sheet, he decided he was going to target Iwata. So,
but he obviously had to because he's not going to target Starfelt, right? So if he's going to target a centre-back with Cameron Carter-Vickers out and Starfelt in, he can only target whoever the other one is. So if it had been Kobayashi, he'd have targeted him. With it being Iwata, he targeted him. So it was a bit dis- I thought it was a bit disappointing. I thought Iwata would have stood up a bit stronger to him. He's a bit more of, you know, he looks like a stronger boy. He looks more physical. It didn't start well, and obviously, you know, then that maybe rattles your confidence a little bit, and Mayne would have got a fair amount of confidence from the success he had early on, and he basically just continued to play his game, which is to try and rough up opponents and get them rattled, basically. And to be fair, it worked. And on another day, he could have, it's just as well he isn't a great striker. Like, he does the bullying thing well, and he throws his weight about physically. It's just as well he's not a brilliant striker. Otherwise, he'd have helped himself to four or five. So he had the chances to do so, and he should have probably come away at least a hat trick. So we probably got off a bit lightly there. But yeah, I think Ange is probably playing a bit of political game, saying he's got a squad to rotate. There's a bit of truth in that. But I think with some of the decisions, Bernabe getting left out, Kobayashi getting left out, I think there's also a bit of a shot across the bows there to say, you know, you got a chance in a big game, albeit with not much at stake, really, and you kind of blew it. So, you know, he can be ruthless like that. And I think if there was a lot of people talking about just putting the same team back out again, give them a chance to redeem themselves. If you do that, then I can see the argument for that. But if you do that, there's like zero consequences for poor performance. And I think we know with Ange by now that there is consequence with poor performance. And I think that was his way of basically, you know, saying the standards are higher than that. And he mentioned that in his post-match press conference after the derby. He said, you know, the standards are set by the club here, not by me, not by the fans. It's like the club as a whole expects a certain level of performance in every game, and we didn't meet it. So, yeah, I think predominantly it's because of performance. That's the main reason. But he's maybe protecting Kobayashi a little bit by saying, yeah, it's to rotate the squad, and because we've got other players available.
Yeah, and we've got Dan, Damien, Mick in the comments saying, in terms of rotation, Benjamin Seagrass deserves a short. Was he restored to the bench yet? He's been out injured for a long time, so I'm not really sure about that one, to be honest. Was it Bane on the bench?
Bane on the bench.
After his new 3-year contract, which, again, that's probably more of a topic for the Tuesday and Wednesday boys to dissect. But yeah, I don't think anyone was surprised at Owen Bernabe going out after Ibrox. And to be honest, there was nobody else really to come in and replace Ralston. But before we start touching on individual players, talk about overall performance. So after the game, Callum McGregor came out and he said that he was really annoyed with the first half, but he was happy with the second half. Did you feel the same way as the captain, Anthony? What was your thoughts on the overall Celtic performance half by half?
Yeah, the first half was definitely typified by a lack of forward press. So I kind of felt the midfield in particular, but basically the front, you know, the front players as well. There just wasn't enough intensity when the ball back. I kind of feel that Stephen Robinson is probably the one manager that's probably figured us out to a certain degree. I mean, that's basically, you know, they beat us 2-0 at their park earlier in the season. They were, you know, probably unlucky not to get a win last on Saturday night. And before the sending off, the last time we played them away, you know, they were well in the game and we were well off at that day as well, when the day we wore the grey strip. And then the sending off sort of changed the dynamic of that game. So you'd have to say three out of the four games, or two and a half of the four games, he's definitely had our number, and they've definitely been our bogey team, I would think, this season. So
I think the only time we've been comfortable against them was when they were down to 10 men. I think two games they had a red card.
Yeah, so I do think that, like, you know, they've domestically probably given us some of, you know, definitely the toughest games, argue, you know, obviously Sevco or not. But that on top of the fact that, you know, we're not playing well, you know, we haven't really had a great performance probably until we stoked Hearts 3-0 in the League Cup. You know, you've got that plus the whole, it's near the end of the season, there's nothing to play for in the sense that the league is wrapped up and it's won, and we're talking about a cup final in 2 weeks' time. So there's a lot of factors at play, and it's very hard to unpack exactly why the performances have been, you know, not up to scratch. On top of that, you know, we're missing Cameron Carter-Vickers, and our defense just seems to get very shaky very quickly when he's not playing. I was thinking back to earlier in the season when he was missing, and Joe Hart just looks like a different goalkeeper when CCV's not playing compared to when he is playing. And you know, he Hart did it again. He parried one out to their right back who should have scored. And you know, pretty soft for the first goal as well. So you've got that, you know, we score a really good equalizer, that we'll touch on that a bit later on. But second half, I kind of felt the subs were probably coming on 10 minutes too late. I would have made the changes around that 55-60 minute mark, but they didn't come on until 71 minutes. I felt the subs did make a difference this week. Last week, they had no impact whatsoever against the Huns, but this week, they did. Our intensity and our press came back. We got the equalizer, and then it was all just a little bit too little too late in terms of getting a winner. But I just kind of felt that had that change been made a little bit sooner, that may have sparked us and maybe got us across the line. Not that I definitely think we deserve to win the game. I think a draw was probably the fair result. But in saying that, you know, Curtis Main must be having nightmares because he's never going to get a better chance to score a hat-trick, let alone a hat-trick against Celtic at Celtic Park, because those chances I think he scored the hard ones. I thought that there was easier ones that he missed compared mm-hmm. to the hard ones.
Yeah, and it would have been the first hat-trick at Celtic Park domestically since 1983, I think, so 40 years. I'm not sure who that last player was, but that was a stat that was going around. In terms of our commenters on the performance, Kevin Mullen, who's not a name I recognise. Thanks for joining us, Kevin. Really poor performance. Need to get the finger out for cup final, but in Ange we trust. Treble coming home. Kaiser saying the forward press has dropped off in the last few weeks. Spot on comment. And that's, again, something that Ange mentioned in his post-match presser. He specifically mentioned that our forward press isn't where it should be. Mahesh is commenting saying Celtic played 332 back passes, where St Mirren had 235 total passes. So his contention is it's just negative play, not creative enough. When you look at the stats for the game, they're quite surprising. What's not surprising is 77% possession. That's just our style of play, and St Mirren's is not as very direct. You wouldn't really expect them to have too much. I was surprised to see we had 26 shots. I don't remember there being that many. I could maybe pull up in my head about 5 or 6 actual shots that were of any note, not 26. St Mirren had 12, and again, there was at one point an hour into the game where I text my dad saying, St Mirren should be 5-1 up here. Like, the chances that they had were quality chances, which again makes the XG stat even more surprising, which has us at 2.83 to St Mirren 1.19. Because I honestly thought St Mirren should be multiple goals ahead at one point in that game in the second half. I was quite surprised that we were still in it at that point. And to the point of the kind of forward press, we only had 4 fouls, which was, again, the same as last week against Sevco. So we're not committing fouls like we usually do. And again, not people normally complain that we're conceding too many fouls when we're the attacking team. But I think those stats do show a drop off in pressure, just in terms of the lack of fouls being committed. Paul, do you want to talk about the overall game as well? What was your take on it?
Yeah, look, on the stats, just while we've got them, I saw a different mix on that, but it was still 21 shots from us, and the worrying stat on that was only 6 on target. So that shows, you know, you're surprised it's that amount. I imagine that some of those were, you know, blocked from reasonably far out or not, never really a threat. So it's a bit of fluff to the, you know, fluffs up the stats a wee bit. Overall, we didn't start great, obviously, and lost the early goal. We then get back on track pretty quickly and score an absolute cracker. And then no sooner have we, you know, and you think from there, we'll push on and sort of do what we usually do and dominate the game and we'll get a result, you know, get our rewards over time. We didn't. We made, you know, first goal's pretty much an absolute slapstick, and the second one's probably even worse. And then, yeah, you just give them the opportunity to have their tails up. They had other chances. And then we, you know, we do look better second half, but we sort of huff and puff, and I just felt we lost some composure, and a bit like the last game, you know, I think it was described as frantic and, you know, desperate at times, and we just similar, like, obviously Carl eventually, you know, showed some composure, and I don't know what they were doing. He should have been closed down. I would have thought there was enough player, you know, they've got enough players behind the ball, and nobody presses him, and he just strolls in, and he's a great strike as well. But again, from there, like, you think, oh, well, we're going to kick on and we'll just absolutely pummel them for the remainder of the game, and it never really eventuates either. So it just had that end of season feel to it. I think, you know, there's a bit of commentary around that, oh no, it's, you know, it's a bit disappointing, or it's a bit of a trend that we're, you know, poor in two games back to back. But, you know, I've got some sympathy for the squad, because they've been absolutely relentless all year, and every time they've been asked to go on and win again and the pressure is up, they just continue to put in big performances, expend loads of energy. It must be hard to get yourself back up when, you know, really there's only one game left. There's only one game that actually means anything, and that's the cup final. Now, I get the argument that, you know, it's maybe a bit worrying if you take your foot off the gas, can you get your foot back on the gas for the final? But, you know, I would expect, I think this week's going to be a bit of a weird game, like midweek away. Again, not much in it for us. Hibs will be bang up for it. You know, they need the points more than we do. So it'd be interesting to see how that is. I imagine we'll probably rotate the team again, but come the last game of the season, presentation day, crowd will be bang up for it, absolutely rammed. Every seat will be taken for, you know, which isn't always the case in the home games. And you would expect he'll put out a strong team that he'll be probably expecting to start the cup final the following week or pretty close to it. So you would think that they would be bang up for that performance, and you'd expect that game to deliver a performance that's worthy of, you know, receiving the trophy in the last day of the season. So I'm relatively optimistic that the performances will come back in that game, and we'll be able to go into the cup final flying. But I've got some sympathy for you know, overall the drop off, but equally it is, to Anthony's earlier point, we've always said, you know, and we're not, you know, a shining light of, you know, originality with this, but that Cameron Carter-Vickers is massive, and, you know, never really drops below, you know, 9 or 8 out of 10. It's becoming abundantly clear, if it wasn't already, how important he is to that team. And also Alistair Johnston to some degree, because he's rock solid as a defender as well. Forget what else he does going forward. So that's, you know, half your defense is gone, and we just look so shaky. And look, you know, Tommy's not here tonight, but he'd probably say, look, some of those players are, you know, it takes a while to get up to speed, et cetera, et cetera. And he's right. Ralph has not played a lot of football. Awat has not played centre back for, you know, probably 4 or 5, 6 months, 7 months at least. And he hasn't played a ton of games either. So, but you'd kind of expect those players that are being given an opportunity now to be kicking on and showing a bit more urgency than seems to be the case.
Okay. Yeah. Good points there. A lot covered.
Sorry. And I've just seen Michael has sort of made a comment to pretty much mirror what I've just said.
Yeah, you'd think the French players would be busting a gut to get into the team for the final, which, and look, Ange said that his comments were they shouldn't even be thinking about the final, so you can take that out both ways, in a sense. There was a couple of comments about the stats we were running through. Michael Ross is taking the mickey out of it. Ange raised his eyebrows twice in the first half compared to 5 times in the second half. So he's not convinced by the stats, but again, you've touched on, Paul, that it's not just stats, it's the eye test of there just seem to be lacking. There's something lacking there. You know, you could look at it and say, yeah, they're running about and putting in effort, but there's a kind of lack of intensity and urgency and focus in these games where we'd have been scoring a last-minute winner. We're now drawing 2-2 St Mirren or 1-1 with Motherwell, where we'd have found the way earlier in the season. Again, Mahesh, if momentum data was an exact match for goals, Celtic score 6, St Mirren score 4. That would be true Ange ball football. Anthony, I'd like to start kind of analysing the goals, and we kind of talked a little bit beforehand about apportioning blame. Would you like to have a crack at the first Curtis Main goal 4 minutes into the game?
Oh, absolutely, Sean. Well, first thing that got spoke about in the group chat when we were watching the game live was communication, because there didn't seem to be much of that between Anthony Ralston and Awata. Clearly that was Awata's ball all day long. The ball comes across, but Ralston decides to try and get a a thigh on it, or I don't know what he was trying to do, but he, you know, this again, lack of communication. Iwata not used to playing centre half. He's, you know, he's apparently played it for his Japanese club. Questionable decision to put him in at centre half in Scotland. So yeah, so they get in each other's roads. The ball comes across. Curtis Main then sort of drags it back, which sort of sells Ralphson a bit of a dummy. Iwata's not close enough to put in any sort of effective block or challenge. He shoots just wide of Joe Hart, and Joe Hart bit soft on the dive to his left, and it gets in, sticks in the back of the net, and that's 1-0 to St Mirren. I think Ralphson's got to probably shoulder the bulk of the blame there, because he shouldn't be going for that ball. But then equally, Iwata for not communicating or telling him that he's going for it. And then I thought Joe Hart was pretty soft. So you can sort of apportion a percentage of blame between the three of them. But and ultimately, it's a big hoof up the park. Trevor Carson's just went route one, and we have not dealt with it at all. And if we can't deal with route one, then it's going to be, yeah, you're going to struggle against some teams, especially at Celtic Park, because that's really the out ball for teams when they come to players. So, yeah, really need to do better. And I guess it highlights AJ missing. So I don't think, you know, you wouldn't think he would make that mistake. And then again, CCV, he would just take out Anthony Ralston and the ball. And Curtis Main. So I think just highlights substitute players playing in that position and a lack of familiarity with one another.
Mm-hmm. I'm actually, so Kaiser is saying first goal Ralston is at fault. For me, as I play defence quite a lot, and to me that's Iwata's fault. I'm actually going to say it's 90% Iwata's fault. He should absolutely not be running out to that position to try and take over Anthony Ralston's job for him, because in doing so he's absolutely left Curtis Main completely on his own, and then the ball breaks to Curtis Main. Like, you know, fair enough to get back in time, but not effectively, because Iwata's got no challenge on him prior to the ball hitting the net, and Ralston is running back so fast that he just gets turned easily. So, Paul, who did you think?
I don't have an issue with Iwata going for it, though, Sean. I just think that he needed to tell everyone that he was going for it. I think that for me is, I used to play centre half. That for me, if you're going to come for it, you rail everyone know that you're coming for it. And I don't think that happened.
I think it absolutely was on. Like, and to me, I've played fullback as well. So I've played pretty much every position and across most parts of the pitch, to be honest, at some point, either kid or adult. But Ralston's not blind to it, right? He's running back towards goal. He can see where Iwata is. If he's blind, like if he's not got Iwata in his eye line, yeah, I'm not giving Ralston too much blame, but he is. He's running right back. He can see Iwata coming across to him. He's got no business doing that, because Iwata's coming forward, and at worst he can do is just pump it out for a throw or hoof it back up the park if he wants to be safety first. What is Ralston doing? Like, you know, a flying karate kick clearance back towards goal. It's just hopeless, to be honest. Like, he's got no business getting involved there. He's had to contort his body in a position to kick the ball where he's got, I think, probably both feet off the ground, but certainly one. Whereas Watt is just coming across and covering it. He's got like, that's all day long, his ball. Compounds it by then, yeah, rushing back and getting turned too softly. My only grievance with Watt is probably he puts the name on it a bit, you know, a bit more clearly and gets Ralston out of the way. But if Ralston's choosing to do that, then, you know, I think that's just daft. And then maybe he could press the ball a wee bit quicker after Ralston gets turned softly. But for me, it's Ralston by a mile, and then Hart's attempt is the only thing I can say is maybe he's slightly like unsighted by Iwata coming out slowly to press it. But I still think he should say, it's not exactly a thunderbolt, is it? He should get down quicker than that, and he should be stopping that. Now it might break out and there might be another chance, but between them, that, you know, Watt is not completely faultless, but I think, you know, if Larson just keeps out of his way, he deals with that simply and there's no danger whatsoever.
There's two things there as well, Paul. One is, if that CCV coming across, is that Ralston going to attempt that same move? I don't think so. So there's a little bit of like lack of confidence there, because obviously he's not used to Watt playing that position. And secondly, Ralston should just be tucking in. So, like, let Awada attack it and win it. And if he fails, then obviously Ralston's then turned around. He's in a defensive position. So, for me, that's, I kind of feel like how that should have played itself out. Obviously, it didn't. But yeah, definitely agree with Paul. I think, yeah, he definitely had every right to go for it, Awada. But it just didn't turn out the way it should have done. So, that was 1-0. Yeah.
I respect what you guys are saying and the commenters, y'all. I'm absolutely in the minority here, but just to me, I'm still saying it's Iwata, right? Because, like, I know you're saying, oh, defenders should shout for it and clear it out, right? And wipe out everything, right? To me, that's like 1990s football. Like, to me, the Iwata should be staying in shape and there shouldn't be any need for communication, right? If Anthony Ralston doesn't touch that ball, it probably bounces out of play. Like, he's taking some off that when he's taking that bad touch. So, like, even if everyone's in possession, that's probably no danger if everyone's in possession, right? And even if Ralston just leaves it, Iwata can get a press on main. I think Iwata's basically bagged.
Are you not just saying that Ralston's, like, at fault because he kept the ball in? Like,
I said 90% Iwata. I'm not saying Ralston's faultless here. I'm just saying it's 90% Iwata's fault. Maybe you've talked him back. Maybe I'll go 75% Iwata. But, like, I'm just saying I don't think Ralston is the number one culprit here. But I accept that I'm in the minority on that position. And you see that reflected later in the game. Like, people are just... Like, there's a chance, the one with Ryan Strain, he has the chance. The one one of you guys mentioned earlier, the Hart palms out and he should score. That would have made it 2-1 at that point, I think. Again, like, in the build-up to that goal, Curtis Main is just completely unchallenged, like 25 yards from goal, free header just to knock it on. Like, nobody goes near him. Everyone's just like, Iwata's too scared to go near him. I don't think Iwata challenged him for a header the whole game. There's another chance in the second half. Again, Strain puts a cross in. And Curtis Main, one of his two back post headers that he should have scored with. Iwata's just nowhere. Like, I think Iwata was just scared of Curtis Main.
Do we think, play devil's advocate here, do we think Starfelt should have taken more responsibility and gone and just picked him, regardless of which setting, gone and just picked him up? Because that's the physical battle that he's the one that's capable of winning that and not being bullied. So, you know, Ange often talks about once they set foot over the whitewash, you know, they've got the freedom to, you know, get solutions for themselves. To me, you know, Starfelt's comfortable on either side. Iwata looks like a player that can pass off either foot as well. So do they not just take a decision to go, well, maybe Starfelt picks up Main and then Iwata can be the loose one, he's the more comfortable passer anyway. So, I don't know. I think that there's an argument for saying that was the solution to the problem. But obviously it didn't happen on the day.
I definitely think we play zonal, so we definitely keep position. So it really, the pass between, depending on whether he's on the left side or the right side of the middle, like, you know. So I think that's how we've always played. So they'll obviously try to play it that way. But, you know, I don't say that Ange gets it wrong very often, but Iwata's not a centre half, I'm sorry, but I saw him going up for some of the headers in the second half against Curtis Main. He did not look comfortable in the slightest, just no even attempt. Like, Ralston was getting in the way, at least he was actually putting his body on the line and putting Curtis Main off a bit, but Iwata was very ineffective. And all right, and we'll talk about our first goal in a second, and he was the one that set that up, but as a defender, that was a boo-boo. He should have stuck with Kobashi and played him again. I know he wasn't great the week before, but I think he learns more by playing again rather than benching him and starting Iwata. And if Iwata's training the house down, then you put him in the midfield. You don't shoehorn players into other positions. So I just kind of think you got that one wrong.
So we're absolutely killing this our time on this Iwata chat. But I do want to inject some positivity into it here. So I will say one thing that Iwata does offer and did contribute positively was that he played a crucial role, a crucial pass in the build-up to the Kyogo goal, which was a real quality goal. Paul, you mentioned that earlier. So Iwata gets the pass to Hitati. Hitati takes a quick touch and pass. Again, Kyogo, amazing touch and finish. Was that, I think somebody mentioned in our group chat, I hope O is watching. Did I imagine that? Or was that?
I don't remember seeing it, but yeah.
Maybe it was a different group chat. Yeah. So, well, there was a little bit of positivity. That was a great goal. And then, obviously, St. Mirren,
Can I just make a quick point on the goal on that goal? So the only add to that, it's a great passing by Iwata, but if you, one of the pickup eyes, Kyogo is telling Iwata where he wants it. So he's saying, play it into Hatate, and then obviously Hatate and Kyogo have built up this brilliant understanding, and he's told Iwata where to play it. He plays a brilliant ball in, and Hatate's quick enough just to turn it around the corner. And after that, Kyogo's finish is absolutely class. He just gets it out of his feet, and he's just, you know,
it was a great finish.
But that little point by Kyogo and the little interaction between the three Japanese players was amazing. There, I thought it was a really good well worked goal. But it was very cool that Kyogo sort of guided Iwata into where he wanted it, which wasn't to him initially.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely, man. And I really enjoyed the goal and the camera angle you get of the Celtic Park. The camera on the halfway line made it look even. It was one of those goals that just lines up really well with the camera, so it looks even more impressive than it would from the other side of the pitch. Which is kind of thing, like when you see Callum McGregor's goal, the equaliser. So I'm going to talk about Callum McGregor for a moment. Like the camera angle on that makes it look like, oh, the keeper should be saving that all day. But then when you see the kind of behind the goals camera, you're like, okay, that's almost starting outside the post and coming back in the way he's curled that. So Callum McGregor to me is crucial in the next two goals, the one that St Mirren score and the one that we equalise. So are we giving him any blame for not getting out? So he's the last man playing Curtis Main onside for the second St Mirren goal. Are we giving him a hard time for that? And then, Anthony, go for it.
Yeah, no, well, there's two things. One, his header to clear the ball was crap. So he didn't get any power or distance on it. So didn't clear his lines. And then he was too slow to get out. I mean, it's a bit of an optical illusion. It did look like that he was offside, but obviously, VAR shows that he was playing him on with the back of his leg. But he was ball watching. And there's a couple of them ball watching. He wasn't the only one. And then Starfelt's weak for the ball that comes back in, where Curtis Main ultimately ends up scoring as well. So again, bit of blame to go around, but it was just a poor clearance from the captain, and then he was a wee bit slow getting out. But unfortunately, whether you're a wee bit slow or not, it was enough to play him onside for the goal. But I still thought Starfelt, could maybe have a bit better challenge in as well. He got sort of out-muscled and out-positioned a bit as well. So not all, the captain's fault, but there's definitely, like I said, share the blame. And again, Joe Hart, again, would a better keeper save it? Hard to say, but again, just sloppy defending generally overall, because there's a few phases of that goal as well. Like, it came in and out a few times. And again, just you've got to clear your lines in those situations, because teams will eventually punish you if you don't. And unfortunately for us, that's what happened on Saturday night. And then the flip side is that, it was a good captain's goal equalised, because, we were at that point, as Paul said, we were probably starting to get a wee bit ragged in terms of just trying to carve chances out of nowhere. But, he had the composure. It was a good ball across from Abada, and then he's managed to, like you say, sort of curl it around and get it back in on the corner and get us a point and probably save our blushes to a certain extent. And I thought McGregor had a good game overall. I thought, he again very consistent in the midfield. It was probably a 7 out of 10. It wasn't like his best game, but it definitely wasn't his worst, and he definitely wasn't the worst on the park either. It was just a solid performance from him. But yeah, definitely had a bit to do with that goal, in my opinion.
I didn't think he actually played that great, to be honest. I thought he was much better second half, but I thought he was well off at first half. And you've seen us a couple of times last few weeks, but just slack and just loose passing. And you just don't expect that from McGregor. We've talked about that a bit. And so, yeah, I think he was just off it. Yeah, he definitely, and his post-match comments kind of covered that on a team basis, but I certainly thought that was him on the front. But yeah, he's got to take a fair amount of blame for the headers weak. But they're all a bit weak. Like, O'Reilly doesn't get out after the McGregor header to put pressure on. At the very beginning, the first header that comes into the box, Mayer is slow to press that header. And look, I've got some sympathy for Starfelt. Obviously, he has come out, as they all should have, and then he gets caught under it because the ball comes back in. And if they've all come out in a line,
he's offside.
It doesn't matter that he's under the ball and he's been beaten to it because he's offside. So, again, I'd say that's probably about the only fault, if it is a fault, from Starfelt in the whole game again. So he was again one of our better performers and certainly our best defender on the day.
And I'm absolutely taking the same position as you guys here. When I watch that goal back, like, I'm really struggling to pinpoint blame. It is so spread around. Like, you're talking about Starfelt, like, running off his man. You're talking about, like, the weak header out. You're talking about not closing and down for the ball back into the box. You're talking about Cal McGregor not as particular being the last man. Like, it is one of those, is a team failing that goal. And you could start, like, share it around four or five players. Is it, are we all in agreement on that one?
Yes, yeah, it's just a poor team goal to lose. It's just sloppy, and it's not the first time. But as I say, it's that kind of weird end of season lull.
Malaise.
Doesn't, you know.
So, go on yourselves not having it. He's saying we're armchair warriors and... No, I will point out.
I reckon that might be aimed at some of the other commentators rather than us specifically. But
we've all played in defence, so I think we are somewhat qualified at a lower level to comment on this. But
it would all be very boring if we all just waved, like, you know, absolved everyone of blame for everything and whatever. But we're here to give an opinion, like, whether people like it or not. So I'll stand by mine tonight.
Again, to inject some optimism into it and to add some bigger picture perspective, Cal McGregor's goal was our 107th league goal of the season, which with two games left, is our new record for the most goals scored in a season by any team in the top flight. In the Premiership era. I believe there was a record set by the Lisbon Lions of 115. So unless we absolutely smash... Hibs and Aberdeen, I don't think we're going to beat that, but certainly a Premiership record of number of goals scored, taking over Brendan Rodgers' Invincibles with 106. Do we care? Is that some succour to the pain of that performance and dropping points? We also maintained the Ange's domestic unbeaten streak at Celtic Park. He's never lost a game domestically at Celtic Park. Do we care about these records, Anthony?
I personally don't. I just think this, like, sort of campaign, we got the league wrapped up against Hearts at Tyne Castle. Performance the last couple of weeks haven't been as great. The pedal was probably lifted off the accelerator to a certain extent. But when you actually look at our squad as it is currently, we are relying on the same group of players week in, week out. So basically 22 players have played more than five games or five appearances for us this season. So, and then if you break it down even further, only 17 of those have 20 appearances or more. So basically you're relying on the same 17 players, give or take, week in, week out. So we've really got to try and get some proper depth into the squad, because Ange is going to the well with the same bunch of players week in, week out. We have been incredibly fortunate with injuries this season, I feel. We haven't really had many. We've had a couple, like, you know, Cal missed a little bit and CCV missed a little bit, but for the most part, we've had first choice players available for most of the season, which is, you know, fortuitous to an extent. Obviously, sports science and stuff like that's important. But when you look at the number of players we have out on loan, we've got 10 players out on loan. And then if you add the likes of McCarthy, and obviously Hazard, Welsh, Turnbull. Well, Turnbull's participated, but again, he's in his last year of his contract this summer. So again, there's not been a renewal there. You've really got to try and push as many of those players out and then bring in four or five players that will contribute to your campaign. And all of a sudden, you go from 17 players to maybe 23 players. And all of a sudden, you've got a squad that's capable of not only getting through a whole season, but also challenging more in Europe as well. Because we didn't have any... two games a week after Christmas. And I think that was a big saving point for us this season. So if we had to start playing two games a week, I think we'd have been, a lot more of a bad situation than we were. So sorry, I sort of thought your question there, Sean. I sort of answered a different question. But it was a point I really wanted to stress and make, because I think part of the reason why we're seeing performances like this now is that, you know, you just... the same guys have expected just to do it every single week. They're not robots. And, you know, I think there's definitely a lot of that going on as well at the moment.
And Ange made that point as well, that they're just humans. We'll try and leave. So you're absolutely right that this kind of rotation, like Ibrox, we had Kobayashi, Bernabe come in and straight back out. And that's illustrating your point there about, you know, this is and just seeing it as well, what you're, the point you're making here, that we don't have the same quality and depth. Even if we do have depth, we would like to have more quality.
We just don't have enough players though, Sean. That's the thing. It's not just a matter of that, it's actual physical bodies.
Not sure about that. I remember when we played Betis and we had like Liam Shaw coming in for, you know, like, I think we're not Urugidi starting at right back. I don't think we're in that kind of position, right?
It can still be better though.
It can always be better, right? That's
but like it definitely can be better, particularly if we want to be serious about Champions League football. I know that's the topics for the Tuesday and Wednesday crew, but let's be serious. If we really want to give it a shake, we're gonna have to bring in more players and better players. It's as simple as that. And I've made my point.
If we're relying on 17 players for the majority of the games and you got 20 in the match day squad, I think you can now list 9 on the bench or, you know, close to that. You know, that's quite a few players on every bench that aren't really, you know, getting much game time. So that shows that there isn't a level of confidence in those players and they're really just making up the numbers as cover. So I agree with you, Adrian. We have gone a little bit off point, but we're coming at a point of the season where it's, you know, that's starting to come into everyone's mind. So, you know, we might as well have a little opinion on it as well. And I kind of touched on this last week, is we've got to, when we add anyone to this squad, it's got to be to be either a first pick straight out of the bat, and that might be hard for people to accept because the squad's done so well and everybody's got their favourites, but they've got to be their first picks right now or really competitive with the player that's holding that jersey. So I don't really care if that's Itate, Kyogo, Jota, Hart, CCV, Starfelt, whoever it is. We need to be buying players that are, if not better than those players, and certainly got the potential to be better than those players, because that's the only way that the overall squad quality lifts. And yeah, it looks like we've got some money to spend. We should have, given the guaranteed, you know, Champions League cash. And if we want to be serious, Anthony says, we've got to go out and spend money on first team quality players. And that will automatically build depth to the squad, because some of those players that are currently holding a jersey will potentially be a second choice.
Well, look, we're talking from a position of privilege here, you know, the old first world problems, in the sense that last year Anthony Ralston was mooted as a potential player of the year and the unquestioned, you know, comeback player of the year kind of thing. But and now we're talking about, well, Ralston's not good enough, we need upgrades. You know, Bernabe, this guy who's supposed to be in the Argentina squad this summer for whatever tour, we're saying he's not good enough. If that's the position we're in, then great. But I do want to stick a pin in that, just because that is a Tuesday, Wednesday kind of topic, and I don't really want to take too much of that from them. I do want to, sir, before we kind of cover the other stuff, we'd like to cover something in midfield and attack. I'll let you guys kind of pick up who you want to comment on here. For me, O'Reilly was the best midfielder on the day, and it's a very different... He has that one deflected shot in the first half. The keeper just bounces off the keeper's face, and like, I think if that chance had gone in, it'd been more of a reflection of kind of O'Reilly's effort and output in the game. He puts a great ball into the back post for Maeda as well. Maeda should probably do better, and to be honest, I was kind of disappointed with Maeda's overall contribution, and Hatate as well was, to me, a kind of minor influence on the game, even though he does get an assist. Jota, I felt, kind of disappeared in the second half, even though in the first half he was just kind of trying to do it all himself. So from the midfield three and the wingers, Paul, can you give us a comment on some of those players who you think you'd like to comment on there?
Yeah, look, I think O'Reilly had a decent game. I'm going to sort of slightly disagree and say that I think Hatate was at least as good as him, certainly sort of first 60-odd minutes. He was the one really trying to make passes that, and we often see this, you know, his pass completion rate probably isn't as high as others because he's willing to try, you know, passes that are, you know, are a bit more likely to open the door, but therefore potentially might not hit. So I thought a lot of what good did come from us was through Hatate in the first half. But you're right, obviously, if the O'Reilly deflected chance goes in, then it's probably a different game. But Hatate had the assist, which was great, and then he obviously had that strike first half as well, which just sipped over the bar when he got a bit of space on the edge of the box. But generally, I thought he was more progressive in terms of his attempts to pass than the rest of them. I agree with you. Maeda was disappointing, and Jota had some nice touches without actually being you know, two killer on the day.
Anthony?
I thought Maeda gave a bit of work right. So I think compared to the week before, we're very guilty of not applying much pressure at all. But I think Maeda sort of gave a wee bit of that. But his final ball and that chance at the back stick. I mean, I admittedly, when I saw it live the first time, it didn't really register with me. But when I watched the highlights back today, I was like, oh, that's a glaring miss. And he's been guilty of that all season. It's just sometimes he just lacks that little bit of finesse, just that little... If he had a bit of Jota's clutch in that situation, he'd probably be playing for us. I'm just trying to feel he was lacking that. I agree with you, Joe. I was just trying to do too much by himself, and he kept cutting in, looking to have that shot. He did it at least three or four times where he's looking up, and just wasn't getting the space because everyone is, you know, some players were camped in the box. He had nowhere to go. Kyogo pops up for his goal. He takes it really well. Atati was okay. Riley probably flew under the radar for me. I know you sort of put in the comments, Sean, when you were doing up the list for tonight, sort of saying, oh, he had a good game. And it's probably in hindsight, yeah, he did. But again, just nothing really that stuck out. You went, oh, he's having a good game. It was just a lot of work. And, you know, I think, again, because everyone else wasn't playing that great, it was more of that rather than him being exceptional and everyone else being good sort of thing. But yeah, he was unlucky with that shot. It was all a bit anonymous really, especially in the first half. And then, like I said, I really felt it was the subs that really sort of sparked it into life. Just everyone was closing, and there's a couple of times where it looked like the Celtic earlier in the season where like Simon got the ball and all of a sudden there was three Celtic players around them and they just coughed up possession. It was like, oh, where's this been the whole game? So, so it's a bit hard to sort of put in individual sort of performances, but just all a bit meh, really. But again, we've touched on the reasons why we think that is. And probably the two bottles of wine and the beers and the gin that I had on Saturday probably doesn't help Matt as much either, but that's a whole other story.
On the specific subject of Maeda, I kind of had an observation that he was doing, and it's kind of reflective of the whole team, where there's still a lot of effort. You know, he's still tracking back, you know, he's tracking Strain back, but Strain was still getting his crosses in. You know, there was two free headers for Curtis Mayne in the back post in the second half that both came from a Strain cross. And Maeda both times was tracking Strain because it's the fullback, it's his man. I'm going to say, if that's a cup semi-final against Sevco, he's blocking that cross. And in this case, he's tracking a man back. He's right there close to him, but he's not getting the blocking. That's my contention. That we're a yard or two short in intensity and effort and urgency.
Well, I'd say Greg Taylor was that as well, because the chances, there was one chance that came across for Curtis Mayne, the one he missed, the really good, like a header he should have scored. Greg Taylor wasn't close enough to the diagonal crossing, and you know, if Greg Taylor's 100% on that, he's blocking that for a corner or, you know, for a throw-in sort of thing. So again, I think that intensity was lacking across the park. You can't just single out one player. It was infectious across the whole team.
Yeah, like I say, it's just representative. That the point I was making was that particular that observation around Maeda was representative of the whole team. I'd like to so we'll come back to the main game as we always do, but just for our little sojourn for 5 to 10 minutes, I'd like to cover some other topics. Paul, let's start with the what could have even been our leading topic tonight, which was the Celtic women. Would you like to cover that and we'll join in and have our comments? Would you like to give us a summary of what happens?
So obviously right to the wire, much more exciting finish to the season in the women's game than it was in the men's. This was obviously wrapped up some time ago. Last game of the season, three potential winners of the league. Celtic hosted Hearts at Celtic Park. Record crowd again, over 15,000 along to that. We had to win and hope results went our way. Rangers hosted Glasgow City, who were top of the league before going into it. At Ibrox, Glasgow City basically needed to win.
If we won.
Well, yeah, if we won, but to be absolutely sure, they were already ahead. If they win, they've won the title. That's it. Rangers needed to win for us to drop points, and a draw would have done us with the win as well. So we got the job done at home.
They didn't actually need us to drop points. They only had to win by more than we did.
That's right. Okay. The goal difference. So that would have worked out for them too. But yeah, we got the job done 1-2-0. Goals from Caitlin Hayes and Natasha Flint, one in each half. I think we missed a good number of chances prior to the first one going in on 43 minutes. So it was probably one of those end of last day of the season, a bit of nerves, but we got the job done. It was all square at Ibrox until I think pretty much the last minute or two when Glasgow City scored to win to be up 1-0. And I think there was still time for some late drama where Rangers had the ball in the net, but it was and that would have obviously done it for us. But unfortunately, it was chalked off. And as the resident ref, Sean, you've already told us off air that you think that was the right decision. So, we just unfortunately fell short at the last minute. So Glasgow City wrap up their 15th title in 16 seasons, which is a pretty impressive stat. But given the amount of investment that both Celtic and Rangers are putting into the game, I would imagine that we'll start to see that swing away over time. But the good news is, despite it being pretty devastating for the girls, the good news is that they secure Champions League football by coming second. The old derby rivals end up in third and there's no Champions League for them. So whilst it's a disappointing finish, it's a good outcome. And we've obviously got the cup final, Sunday, you mentioned. So, there's still time for more silverware, having obviously won the League Cup previously.
I'm pretty sure it's Sunday because our trophy day is Saturday and their cup final is the next day. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I think you're right.
Mm-hmm. Anthony, would you any praise for the women's team despite the pain of what happened?
Well, a couple of things. So obviously, Glasgow City score, make it 1-0 in the 92nd minute, and then Rangers almost equalised after that. So I think word got out to Celtic Park that Rangers had equalised. So obviously everyone got their hopes up and then they were found out, obviously it got chalked off. So there was that wee bit of heartbreak, I guess. But when you're relying on other results the last day in the season, you know, that's always a possibility. They did everything they could. I think the support was great as well. I think we got just almost shy of 16,000 people in Celtic Park, so that was a fantastic achievement, and that's now a new record for the women's game in Scotland, which is fantastic. And that's now the second time that a Glasgow team has won at Ibrox, or won a cup at Ibrox, which is the Celtic youth team won there a couple of weeks ago, and that's now Glasgow City clinched the title at Ibrox as well. So at least somebody's winning titles at Ibrox. It's certainly not Rangers.
Kaiser's mentioned that loved the women's game yesterday. The zombies are serial losers at every level. I'm not sure if that's a deliberate misspelling of serial, but hilarious either way. Michael Ross, Greenwall was magnificent. Make it happen for next season. We're running out of time, but quick thoughts on that. Greenwall, what do you reckon, guys?
Well, we touched on it last week, Sean, and we're pretty much in agreement, but obviously there's issues around moving long-term season ticket holders around, and also the hospitality. So I think, you know, in an ideal world, yes, it would happen. But when it comes to money in Celtic, not always. You've got that historical legacy piece with, you know, people that have been in that section of the stand for a very long time. So it'd be a matter of finding equal or better seats elsewhere for them. So I think there's quite a few challenges to make that happen. But, you know, it does look very, very impressive when it's going.
I don't think it'll be next season, but if they continue to open up Celtic Park for the women's game and we continue to see those crowds sort of come in at those numbers, they'll continue to use it as an opportunity to showcase what it can look like. So there's a fair amount of internal politics, both as Anthony says, both hospitality-wise and sort of long-standing season ticket holders, but I don't think it should be insurmountable. And I think we touched on it last week, like Anthony says, and it's sort of, to me, I think we want to try and do something like the Westfalen at Dortmund, where that one end is, you know, it's just a huge spectacle, and the ultras and fans making it, you know, just a great sight. So yeah, fingers crossed. Because we touched on this, you've obviously got two ultra groups now, and they're pretty much in opposite corner. Well, there are now, yeah. But I think that you obviously sort of Green Brigade And I think they're called just North, the boys.
North Curve, there's the boys in North Curve as well, right?
Yeah, so I think North Curve is, they're in with the Green Red in that corner still. I think they're both in that section. And then the boys are in the opposite corner next to the Jockstein stand. So they're sort of split about as far away from each other as possible. So getting them in the same spot would definitely make you know a better spectacle and kind of a joined up approach to the, I guess, the chants and singing and all that that comes with the ultras.
As long as we don't follow Austin FC and the MLS's lead, they had a "We Are Groot" post like tifo at the in the stadium during the week. Obviously, some sort of Marvel tie-in sellout thing. It's Matthew McConaughey's team, so God knows, but. Whoever go down that road, I think, just bin the whole thing. But hopefully not.
The Emirates Arena at Kerrydale Street, is that what you're talking about?
Well, be careful what you wish for. I guess when we're talking about serial losers, we probably should touch on the teams at the bottom of the league. No changes, actually, because they all got beat, didn't they? So Killy, well, Ross County,
the changes, and St Johnstone are now safe, but yes.
Well, St Johnstone are safe, yep. But wins to St Johnstone, Motherwell, Livingston. Livingston, probably their first win in about five or six games, I reckon. Nothing changes with two games to play. So we'll see what happens there. But I'm not fancying Dundee United at the moment. And on top of that, I just wanted to say that Partick Thistle are looking pretty good. They're 3-0 up aggregate against AIA United with one game to play. So they seem to be flying from fourth position and look like they might be the team taking on second bottom.
Yeah, and it could be any of those three. But Dundee United play Kilmarnock on Wednesday, and I believe Stephen Fletcher is out for the last two games. So I think Dundee United are looking pretty good for the drop, and it's between Kelly and Ross County, I think, to face Partick Thistle. So it should be interesting, especially with that game on Wednesday night. Let's just finish up by circling back to the Celtic St Mirren game. Now, there's been weeks in the past where this has just been an absolute foregone conclusion before we even got to it. And look, to be honest, from our chat so far, I have no idea which way you guys are going to go here. But as always, we'll conclude with our, who did you think was the man of the match in the Celtic St Mirren game? So I'll start with you, Anthony. You have to be the one that sticks your neck out here. I'm going to take the privilege of being last as the host. Who did you think was the man of the match in the Celtic St Mirren game?
I'm going to put that to one side just for 2 seconds, just so I can get a little bit of thinking time, because I've been thinking about the whole podcast and I still don't have an answer for it. I just wanted to say that John Beaton's been announced as the referee for the Scottish Cup final. Graham Stewart and Gordon Crawford as linesmen. And you've got David Dickinson as the fourth official and Stephen McLean on VAR. So
some good hun names in there.
Yep. And then the only other thing I wanted to touch on the Scottish Cup was just that ScotRail has running an express service for Inverness Cali fans, but is slugging them £77 return. So that's pretty rough. They probably need to work that a little bit. So with that aside, you've convinced me, Sean. I'll go with Matt O'Reilly. I was probably leaning more towards Callum McGregor, but the more I was thinking about that second goal, I'm thinking, well, he was culpable for that. Matt O'Reilly didn't really put a foot wrong. And like I said, the only thing that probably didn't cap off his performance was an assist or a goal, but slim pickings, to be honest. Everyone was run through the whole team in my head. I'm thinking, yeah, you can maybe say maybe Kyogre for that first goal, so it was a great finish, but he didn't do anything else I can remember after that. So Matt O'Reilly by default.
Anyone listening, please put your man in the match in the comments as well. We'd love to get those in too. Paul, who did you think?
It's not easy, is it? It was a stretch last week, but there was at least one player that was kind of had a good performance. Honourable mention to Starfelt. I don't think I think he was at minimal fault for the second goal, and other than that, he was pretty solid all day. But he was part of a defence that were pretty sloppy all around, so he probably just get. But I'm gonna. I know you don't like giving it to players that score goals, but I'm gonna give it to Kyogo for, an amazing finish. And you know, as Anthony says, he maybe doesn't do a whole lot else, but you know, quite often that isn't the case. His work rate was still phenomenal. He was one that, you know, his press continued to be good. And yeah, he absolutely has just a brilliant finish. So I will give it to Kyogo.
This is wild because in my head I was swaying between two players and you guys have named them both. Mahesh is saying, I'm going to say Mahesh does not think it was O'Reilly because his earlier comment was, O'Reilly doesn't stick to his bread and butter, focusing on right side attack. His touches are spread out all over the field, whereas Hatate smack bang in his wheelhouse on the left. Maybe I'm being presumptuous, thinking that he doesn't think he's man of the match for that reason, but that's I don't think much of him. Kaiser saying, yeah, O'Reilly probably edged it for me too. And yeah, look, Kyogo gets one chance that I can remember anyway and absolutely buries it. So it's tempting to go with that kind of clinical finishing. But for me, yeah, I'm going to give it to Matt O'Reilly. But I think it's very, very close. And I think we're kind of, and it's interesting as well, Starfelt's name has come up in every game since CCV has been out, which is something remarkable as well. But yeah, I'm going to edge it. And to give him the vote by majority, I'm going to say Matt O'Reilly was my player of the game. So we're just edging over an hour now. So Anthony, anything you've got written down or any thoughts in your head that you'd like to round up with? Any final thoughts, any tributes you'd like to give, any recommendations? Give us your wind up.
No, I haven't actually got anything, Sean. I've managed to work through everything on my list. So all I'll say is make sure you like and subscribe to the podcast and our YouTube channel. So you can follow us on all the socials above on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. And yeah, get involved. And like I said, the more you like and subscribe to our channels, it grows the channel and means that more Celts can find us and watch us and disagree with our opinions, but that's perfectly okay. It's a democracy and that's what we like. We like a bit of particularly when, you know, we aren't playing well, because it's all well and good coming on here when we've won 3 or 4-0 and it's all a dawdle and it's all smiles and oh, great performances. But you know, when things aren't, you know, necessarily going as well, that's when I find it's more interesting and there's more to break down and discuss. So happy to have you all coming on board and having a say.
Yep. Paul?
He's trying to pinch your job again, Sean. That was very host-like, I thought.
I was going to call
very
it.
Very host-like.
Yeah. Saving me the effort.
I'm going to stick to the theme of the last few weeks and do a music recommendation. I know Johnny does it on the Pot Noodle, and I think Gav started doing it on a Tuesday, so I'll be the resident muser for this group if you want. I've discovered a Scottish guy called Hamish Hawk in the last week or so, maybe vocals a bit like Morrissey or Alex from what are they called? That's just annoying. The Take Me Out crew, Franz Ferdinand. Oof, there you go. So like sort of big baritone male vocal. Hopefully it's not with politics of Morrissey, but yeah, he is he's pretty interesting singer, boy from Edinburgh, just started to break through. His second album came out recently. So Hamish Hawk is a music recommendation for those that are interested.
Cool. I'm sure a lot of people will do that. I often pick up on the recommendations from our guys and the blogs, other podcasts. I do enjoy getting those recommendations. In the comments, got Michael Ross. I hit that like button. Kaiser, smash like troops. And Mahesh, great chat, guys. Keep up the brilliant work. Thanks, Mahesh. And so, yes, please like and subscribe, and including this episode. Liking the individual broadcasts does really help us, as well as liking the show overall. Anything else you'd like to see us do, just drop us a comment, drop us a line. We always love to have our listeners involved as much as possible. So please don't feel shy about contacting us or following us in any way on social media. In terms of my final thought, I will just kind of say, if there's anyone listening that's in Western Australia and is of a certain vintage like we three are, there's some chat at the moment about potential breakaway with Masters going away from Football West. So yeah, have a think about that. Football West not exactly covering themselves in glory recently, so let's just keep that in mind. If you do play Masters football in Western Australia, you heard it here first, then keep that in mind for future plans, maybe next season, and maybe even contact me if you're interested in something like that. Okay, other than that, have a good week, and listen in on Tuesday and Wednesday. We do have a game on Wednesday night, which I guess is Thursday morning for us against Hibs, so hopefully we'll get a positive result there. And then we finish up with Trophy Day on Saturday, which is, I believe, 7:30 or 7 p.m. for us in Western Australia. We should make it. It's 7 or 7:30, which would make it 9 or 9:30 out east. So it should be a good Saturday night, trophy day. Hopefully the guys turn up, and then it's a Saturday the following week for the cup final. So I'm not overly optimistic for the Hibs game, but let's hopefully we start on that one, and then get really G'd up for the kind of final two games, trophy day and cup final. That's where you normally get your intensity. Oh, sorry, almost forgot. I starred this comment from earlier. One of our regular listeners, Northampton Tim, put in the comment, "My birthday today, spent this morning in a hospital waiting 4 hours to see my consultant. Could have had fifth pint by now." So hope you're well, Northampton Tim. Hope there's nothing serious, and happy birthday from all of us here.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. Yeah.
Other than that, tune in on Tuesday and Wednesday, and otherwise we'll see you next Monday with us. Thanks all.